From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're meeting one of the men seeking to be the mayor of the city of Wilmington. Wilmington is home to more than 117,000 people. That's growth of about 11,000 people since the last census in 2010. 73% of the population identifies as white, less than 20% as African American, and 6% is Latino or Hispanic. According to current projections, if Wilmington sees low growth, which is not what we expect in this part of the country and the state, over the next quarter century, the city will have about 14,000 more people in 2040. If growth continues at an accelerated pace, the city could be home to more than 50,000 additional people by then. The mayor of Wilmington presides over a nonpartisan council of five members and a mayor pro tem. We had planned to have each candidate, Mayor Bill Sappho and challenger Todd Zola, talk one-on-one with me today, answering my questions and yours. We had invited Todd Zola, confirmed his appearance on the program. He has not shown up, which is not a surprise based on the bio that he sent us and videos that he's posted on YouTube and Facebook. Since he is not here, I'm going to read a portion of the bio that he sent, and then we will spend the hour with Mayor Bill Sappho. Todd Zola writes, "I have 18 credits of University Phoenix Axia. I also studied martial arts, which I want to get back into very soon. I do have a gift of able to find people or knowing if they've been kidnapped or they have been murdered or they left the people they were in love with before. I also can or used to see the future at one time. Now I can sense the future like Super Bowl in NFL, who will win the games." And this bio goes on. As you can see, it's not very coherent. You can give us a call during the live Thursday show at 910-343-1138 and ask your own question of Mayor Bill Sappho. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Joining me now is Mayor Bill Sappho, who was first elected to Wilmington City Council in 2003 during his first term as a council member. Then Mayor Spence Broadhurst announced a move away from Wilmington. Council unanimously approved Bill Sappho to finish out that term. Since then, he has won re-election as mayor five times, and he is seeking his sixth mayoral term. Bill Sappho, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And again, you can ask your own question by calling 910-343-1138 or emailing coastline@whqr.org. Mayor Sappho, just going back to 2009, you beat Paul Knight by winning 61% of the vote to his 39%. In 2011, you beat Justin Lanassa by taking 71% of the vote to his 28.5%. In 2013, no challenger, 92% of the vote. The last time, 2015, you also had no formal challenger and took 95% of the vote. What do you think you're doing in this job that the overwhelming majority of Wilmington voters appreciate?
Well, I would hope that they feel that I'm doing a good job and that I tried to be a consensus builder. I tried to represent all of the citizens of this community, and it's a diverse community, to hear their concerns and to try to formulate policy and create policy that, you know, that they want to see happen. It is difficult at times, obviously, working with so many different groups and so many different people. But I think it's the job of a mayor to bring a community together and then to make certain that we move forward with the plans that the city council has adopted, working with our city management and our city manager to get those plans in action as quickly as possible.
We've been hearing from social scientists and political scientists that this country is more polarized than it's ever been. People are self-sorting and aligning with ideologies in a way that they haven't before and rejecting people that they see as having different ideologies or beliefs or political views. How have you seen the tone on city council change since 2003 when you were first elected to the way it is now?
Well, I can tell you the tone of the council has always been one of consensus, to try to work together as elected individuals. We're elected by the people to get things done. So I feel that the council hasn't changed that much. But the way people contact us, the way people organize, has changed dramatically with social media. There's no doubt about it. It happens overnight where I can see a big, large crop of people come forward against a particular issue or voicing their concerns much quicker than they did in the past, where they'd pick up a telephone or they would email you or they would write you letters. Today, it's much different. I do feel that there is a polarization. There's no doubt about it. We are sorting ourselves into enclaves of people that think like us or vote like us. There's no doubt about it. And I've said this many times. We're more diverse as a community. We're more diverse as a nation than we've ever been. But we're also more segregated than we've ever been, based on a lot of different things. And I just read a book by Bill Bishop, University of Texas professor, that talked about this and how this is happening in our communities throughout the country, in our counties, what have you. And I think that the mayor's job, a council person's job, is to reach out to different parts of the community and try to bring the community together, because what I find is that most people, no matter what their political stripe is or their ideology is, have a lot of things in common. And I think that when people can talk to each other and look at each other and kind of work through their differences, people will come together and come to some sort of a compromise and make things happen. I think that when you're kind of stuck in your place and I'm stuck in my place and we don't talk to each other or see each other, but maybe are kind of talking to each other through Facebook or social media, where we can maybe say things to each other that we wouldn't say if we were face-to-face, I think it's different. And I see the difference when people come together, especially in public hearings, when people come in and express their opinions or their views, and then a developer or whatever, if it's a zoning issue, where they take that information back, you know, kind of work through their process and make something that the council would support or approve. So, you know, I think we've got a lot of work to do in this country to make certain that we're talking to one another again. And it's not easy in this social media climate that we find ourselves, but it can be done.
Brian and Jim wrote in during an interview with candidates for Wilmington City Council. They pointed out that a majority of city council and planning commission members have a connection to the real estate and development industry. Jim and Brian are not the first to make these observations. There is concern out there that the push for growth is running roughshod over concerns about infrastructure to support mm-hmm. that growth and the environment. What do you say to Brian and Jim?
Well, I would say to Brian and Jim, first of all, there is a process that the city planning staff and the city council have adopted that any kind of development has to meet based on, you know, the amount of traffic that a development is going to generate. What are the impacts to the roadways? How is that going to be mitigated, not only for roads but also to the environment, especially with stormwater regulations and making certain that people take care of all their stormwater in a way that does not hurt or harm the environment. And then, obviously, does the plan that the person is bringing forward meet the criteria of what we would like to see built there and designed there? So that has to meet a certain criteria based on a comprehensive land use plan that the citizens help put together with the planning staff. If they meet that first hurdle through the planning department, because what a lot of people don't see is the amount of development that is turned down, or where a developer will come in and say, I want to put this there, and the planning department say, we will not support that particular development here because it does not meet the regulations within our comprehensive land use plan, that is never talked about, never seen. So they have to meet a certain criteria through the planning department. Then it has to go before the planning commission, and the planning commission then has to determine whether they feel that it is a good project or not. And then, of course, you know, kind of spell out the things that they find that they would like to see changed in the plan. And then, of course, then goes on to city council that finally makes the ultimate decision. One thing that I will tell you is that I've heard that comment many times. Currently on the city council that we currently have, which is seven members, two of us are in the real estate industry. the majority of the council is not in the real estate industry. And there's one person, Ms. Mayor Pro Tem, that used to have a real estate license. I don't even know if she still does, was part-time in the real estate industry at one time. But there are only two members, myself and Mr. Rivenbark, that currently have real estate license that are actively involved in the real estate business. The vast majority of council is not part of the real estate industry. I will also, let's talk about growth for a second. You know, we live in a dynamic area. People are moving here for a lot of different reasons. The two biggest growth nods in our community, pods in our community, and I've said this over and again, is the University of North Carolina at Wilmington that's bringing us almost 1,000 additional students a year, going from about 15,000 to about 20,000 over the next 7 to 8 years. There is no other community, neighborhood in this community that is bringing us that amount of people. And believe me, I like to see the university grow, but there are growth issues that are tied to that. The other thing that we have here that brings a lot of people to our community on a day-in and day-out basis is our hospital. New Hanover Regional Medical Center is our largest employer with over 6,000 people. So we're going to continue to see growth in that particular segment because it really services a 5-county area, and a lot of people come here for medical services every single day.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're meeting Mayor Bill Saffo, who has served the city of Wilmington as mayor since 2006. When we come back from this break, we'll take your questions during the Live Thursday show. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today, we're meeting Mayor Bill Saffo, who is running for his 6th term to be mayor of the city of Wilmington. The mayor presides over a 5-member nonpartisan council, a mayor pro tem, and serves a 2-year term. You can ask your own question of Mayor Saffo during the Live Thursday show by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Mayor Saffo, short-term rentals are a source of tremendous controversy and head-scratching, I know, among city staff. This has been a tough nut to crack in terms of developing policy. Some stakeholders, of course, say stricter standards must be applied before homes can be rented out on a short-term basis. Others say short-term rentals are a critical part of Wilmington's tourism industry and certainly the right of the property owner. You've been, of course, directly involved in some of these discussions. Where do you stand on the issue, and how do you think policy needs to evolve on this front?
Well, I definitely feel that we need some regulation on the VRBOs. I think there's a consensus among council that we have to have something in place. I think what that looks like is something that we have been struggling with since this issue came up. We've been looking at best practice methods around the country. We've been looking right here within the state of North Carolina to see what they are doing about it. There's pros and cons in each one of these regulatory environments that people are looking at. We are talking in the 21st century with this Uber type of an economy, and how do you regulate it, and then how do you enforce it? And there are passions on both sides. Where I come down is that I do have a concern as to what a VRBO, these short-term rentals, could do to the character of a neighborhood. I also feel that people have a right to be able to rent out their property in a way and in a form that does not destroy the character of the neighborhood, and also gives the opportunity for that homeowner to make money.
How can VRBOs or Airbnbs destroy the character of the neighborhood?
Well, I think that you could get to a point where all of it becomes much more financially viable to rent out your property on a short-term basis than not. And then the character of that neighborhood then starts to look like everything is there temporarily. Where you have character, where you have a neighborhood, where you have neighbors, where you have people out in the street talking to each other, or a neighborhood concept where it somebody's there today, somebody's there tomorrow, somebody's there the next day. And the character of the neighborhood starts to slowly disintegrate. Not that these people that come here are bad, not the people that rent out these places, because I've gone by and taken a look at the homes and that they're renting out. They're in great shape. They're usually taken care of better than even long-term rentals. I just think that the character of the neighborhood starts to disintegrate to some degree. I will tell you that I believe that on council, the consensus is if somebody wants to rent out their home and lives there and is there, I don't think there's a problem with it. I think it's the whole house rental where somebody is not there that is the concern the council is looking at more intently. And look, we may have to go through a couple of different rules and regulations before we finally get it right. I'm not saying we're going to get it right on the first time, but I think that we might have to be prepared that once or whatever regulation council decides to move forward with has to be enforced. And that's the other part of that. How do you enforce it? Because it is a large undertaking with the amount of people out there that are renting in their properties over the internet. Is how do you regulate them? And that's also a very important piece, because the next call I'm going to get is from a neighbor that says, why aren't you enforcing your own ordinance? So that's another piece of this that has to be clarified and filtered before we get to that point.
And what are some of the new thoughts on how to enforce it? Because we've heard from city staff that that certain cities like Asheville have tried to regulate these, and it just doesn't work, because you can still go and find in districts where these kinds of rentals are supposedly out of compliance with zoning ordinances, you can still find those properties.
I think obviously registering your property and making certain that that registration number is accompanied with who's in the house and how do we get in touch with them if there's an incident and parking and stuff of that nature. I think there's some systems out there that we are looking at that other communities around the country are using that may be viable here. We have to, you know, check that out and go through that process to make certain that they've got a good reputation and what they say they can do, they're doing. And we are looking at a few. But it is difficult. And that, I think, is one of the things that, at least from my perspective, is how do you regulate them after the fact? And I think that we'll come up with some regulation, but we've got to make certain that we can enforce the regulation.
So you've said that if necessary, you'll tweak the policy as you go along to make it fit. But what's the timeline? What's the next thing that happens on this front?
Well, I think we'll have some sort of a public hearing at some point in time in the very near future to start, you know, to hear what the community has to say, to hear the passions of the community for those that want them and those that don't want them. And then the council will have to make a decision, right? You know, maybe not then and there, but we may ask for it to be sent back to get some more information before we make a decision. We may be at a point where we're ready to make a decision. I think there's some council members that may be ready to make a decision now. But I want to make sure that we try to get it right. This is, I know, a very emotional, hot topic issue. And, you know, I've heard from people that are in this type of business that are making money, and some of them are saying it's the only way that I can keep my property, and if you do away with it, I'm going to be hurt financially. And then on the other side, those people that are saying to me, I've made a big investment in my house here and in this neighborhood here, and I don't want to see the character of my neighborhood destroyed with this type of rental situation, and please protect our neighborhoods. So we're trying to find some middle ground here, some sort of a compromise that will work hopefully for both sides. Usually it doesn't make any group happy, but I am personally looking for a non-zero solution to this very complicated problem. And believe me, council has asked a lot of good questions, continues to ask questions, has asked our staff to reach out to other communities around the country to see who's got it right, who's got it wrong. And even as of this morning, I was talking to one of the planners from Charleston that have gone back through another rendition and putting a task force together to evaluate the policy that they had in place that they felt was not working for them.
How has Charleston changed their policy?
Well, Charleston's concern has been the affordability of rents down there. And what the Charleston City Council was hearing from people, from citizens, was, I want to live in Charleston. I can't afford to live in Charleston because every time I go to rent a piece of property, the owner is telling me it's more viable for them to rent for VRBO as opposed to a long-term rental. And we're going to find that to be the case here in Wilmington. Any city that's on the coast, that's a popular tourist destination, has got a lot of people wanting to come here. And it's probably going to be more viable for most people to be able to rent out their properties on a short-term basis as opposed to a long-term basis. So that's another point to this whole debate is affordable rental property. And one of the things that we are wrestling with here in Wilmington because of the popularity of the community and the availability of land is affordable housing and affordable rents. So it's a complicated problem, but at the same time, I think we can find some common ground, some middle ground here that hopefully will work. But here again, we're probably going to go through one or two renditions of this. We may even see the state legislature take some action on this in the future, because I think it's not only affecting the city of Wilmington. I know Raleigh's dealing with it, Greensboro, Asheville, Charlotte. Everybody, every major city in the state of North Carolina is wrestling with this same issue. And it's just, you know, it's just the 21st century economy coming into, you know, your community. And we're still dealing sometimes in 20th century technology and how we monitor and how we regulate these things.
Are you saying, we're going to get to Darcel in just a moment. Right now, if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Mayor Bill Saffo, who has served as mayor in the city of Wilmington since 2006. He's been a member of city council since 2003. His challenger, Todd Zola, was invited to today's show. He confirmed his appearance, and he didn't show up. Mayor Saffo is taking your questions on this live Thursday show. You can call us, like Darcel has, at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. But just before we leave this discussion about short-term rentals, so how specifically would either the city of Wilmington or the state of North Carolina regulate rents? Are we talking about?
I don't think regulating rents, but how do you regulate a VRBO? And that, you know, some are saying they want no regulation, just leave it the way it is. You know, no harm, no foul. Everything is perfect now. And others are saying it is causing parking problems in my neighborhood. It's causing noise issues in my neighborhood. I don't have permanent neighbors. I have people that are moving in and moving out on a daily or weekly basis, and that's just not what a neighborhood should be or look like.
But you also talked about this whole idea of the VRBO business model changing the market in terms of for longer-term renters. And so how do you address that? Do you put limits on?
I think that's one of the issues that we are wrestling with. You probably would have to put some limits as to how many of these are allowed in a community or in an area, as opposed to everybody being able to do it. So that's
and
the,
so
some
then
of the
would
things.
It be first come, first serve?
Possibly. And here again, that's one of the options that we would have is first come, first serve. A lottery, you have to use them within a certain time period. So is that fair or not fair? These are the things that we're struggling with as a council. And as I've said, I think we've asked some really good questions. I think the staff is getting us some answers to those questions. I know that they're out there scouring around to find out who's got the best policy out there. But here again, you know, a policy that may be good in Charleston or Savannah or Asheville may not be good for Wilmington.
And the last I heard from city staff, they hadn't found a policy that was working, actually working in any of those cities.
And that's right. And that's why you're seeing Asheville revisiting this issue. That's why you see Charleston revisiting this issue. That's why Raleigh has put it off so many different times, because they keep finding issues that they run into that they haven't been able to answer. So it's got everything, all the ingredients of a tough policy that you have to make. You got free market dynamics involved. You've got regulatory processes involved to protect neighborhoods. How many are you going to allow? How many you're not going to allow? Who should pick and choose that? So I hope everybody can understand that we are looking at it, and we're looking at it very seriously, and we've had a lot of concerns from both sides. But I feel that we will come up with some policy that will make some sense. And if it doesn't make sense and that we have to tweak it, we will.
And from the point of view of the General Assembly, what might the state do? What kind of regulation
would
that
involve? The state could come in and basically say to the cities, we don't want you to put any regulations in place. That could happen. So we don't know.
And is the scuttlebutt that legislation might be in the works?
It could be out there. It could be. I mean, obviously, there's lobbyists on both sides. You have the hospitality industry that is losing some business because of this. They may weigh in on this discussion. You have the VRBO industry that's also a big player in politics around the country, and they may weigh in on it. So, you know, stay tuned. This is not going to end with a policy that the city of Wilmington makes. It's going to probably be altered, changed. We may get some federal law. We may get some state law. Who knows?
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Mayor Bill Saffo today. You can ask your own question during the live Thursday discussion by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Darcel, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Great job, Rachel. And let me be the first to congratulate the mayor for its next term, based on what I heard in the beginning of the hour. My question, Mayor Saffo, I've gone to some of the neighborhood discussions that's been going on in the city. My concern is about the black youth. Specifically, in the summers, I was hoping when some of the house flippers would consider putting some young staff, young people to learn some needed job skills. And how could you encourage businesses to want to mentor black youth? And I want to know what kind of, how would you go about engaging? I've seen you in many different diverse groups. I think you do reach out. I'm very complimentary with you, but I do see Wilmington a greater divide. When mm-hmm. I tell people Wilmington, it stands for the letter W, and mm-hmm. that is white. Mm-hmm. So how can you encourage me to be more hopeful that things will change for the youth, the black youth specifically, in the city of Wilmington?
Well, thank you, Darcel, and thank you for that question. I know that one of the things that we put together several years ago was the Blue Ribbon Commission, and that came from an initiative that actually Dr. Earl Sheridan, who sits on the city council, asked for, which was, you know, let's take a look at what are the pitfalls and the ills that are affecting underprivileged youth in our community, where they're rather joining a gang and dropping out of school and getting into situations where are dire. And through that process, working with our district attorney, working with our sheriff, working with the university, the hospital, the city, nonprofit organizations, the Chamber of Commerce, all coming together and creating this group called the Blue Ribbon Commission, using a model in Harlem called the Children's Zone there that was created many years ago by a guy by the name of Jeffrey Canada, where we started to look at the issues that are affecting underprivileged youth in our community. And that involves so many different aspects. It involves health. It involves nutrition. It involves education. It involves housing. Just like any other family structure, you have to make certain that everything is in place, or if people are in need of specific services, that you can provide those services to those youth, to that youth's family, in fact. So we were able to work with our nonprofit organizations in creating a model that we feel has had some impact. And we picked an area in the north side which had some of the highest crime rates, highest teen pregnancy rates, highest dropout rates, and implemented this program in a very small area to see what kind of an impact we could have. And what we have seen, we feel that we've had some impact, I think good impact. To say dramatic impact, no, but I would say an impact where we're hearing from the community as to what their needs are. And one of the things that the community did share with us, as Darcel mentioned, is their youth need programs or jobs in the summer. So this is the second year that the city, along with many other organizations, have been part of this program through the Blue Ribbon Commission, is created a jobs program for at-risk youth. Now, the job program started off with a very small group to begin with the first year. This is the second year that we did it. We had over 40 youth. We hope to expand that next year to maybe 80 youth, and then from there. And then engaging the private sector to help employ these young people in the summer months so they can get job skills so they can open up their eyes that there's another opportunity for them if they get an education, if they graduate from high school, if they get to community college or college, and also give them hope and aspirations that there's another way out as opposed to, you know, maybe a dead-end street that some people find themselves in. So it's a big social experiment here that we're working on, but I think it has a lot of merit, and we're doing whatever we can in our community with the monies that we have to do that. Plus, what the other thing that we found out from talking to the community was the fact that they needed more after-school programming, recreational facilities. So in the Parks bond that was just passed.
And when you say the community, you're talking about communities of color here in Wilmington.
Yeah, communities of color. Where we're in there talking to the community, hearing what the people are saying, and they're telling us we need job skills. So that's one of the initiatives that the community college is working with the county commissioners in creating this vocational high school, which is something that I think is desperately needed in the 21st century today because not everybody's going to go to college. And then just the other part of it was the recreational facilities, putting two new recreational facilities, one in MLK and one in Maids Park, for additional gymnasium. So these kids have some after-school programs and summer programs in the summer months to get them off the street and involved in something.
And when we come back from this break, we'll talk a little bit more about the racial makeup of Wilmington and some of these other efforts. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're meeting Mayor Bill Saffo, who has served the city of Wilmington as mayor since 2006. His challenger, Todd Zola, was invited to today's show, confirmed his appearance, did not show. Mayor Saffo is taking your questions on the live Thursday show. You can call us today at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're talking with Mayor Bill Saffo, who is running for his sixth term as mayor of the city of Wilmington. The mayor presides over a five-member nonpartisan council, a mayor pro tem, and serves a two-year term. Bill Saffo has been a member of city council since 2003, when he was elected as a city councilman. Just before we went to break, we were talking about the Blue Ribbon Commission and initiatives to make sure that children of color in the community have job opportunities during the summer months and how that initiative is growing and some other work mm-hmm. that the BRC is doing. But, of course, we know that Wilmington is a very segregated city, and you said yourself when we were talking earlier that people are self-sorting across all kinds of mm-hmm. lines. Racial lines are one of those lines that are very observable here Absolutely. In the city of Wilmington.
Sure.
And it's something that you've grappled with mm-hmm. throughout your time on city council. Let's start with some specifics, like the Confederate monuments. There mm-hmm. are two statues near the entrance to the downtown area in Wilmington. One is of George Davis, mm-hmm. Attorney General of the Confederacy at the corner of Market and Third. Another is honoring the soldiers of the Confederacy at Dock and mm-hmm. Third. Mm-hmm. What do you think about having those monuments marking the entrance to the downtown area?
Well, you know, there was something on CBS this morning on Sunday, and the professor said that all politics is local, but so are all memories. And one of the things that I was most impressed with was when we erected the 1898 memorial. And as I shared with you, Rachel, there were people in this community that did not want to see that memorial erected. They just thought it was a bad time in the city's history that we should not be erecting that type of a memorial. But through the efforts of a lot of different people, especially Bertha Todd, the McRae family, Mr. Roundtree, and others that became part of this process of healing, talking about it, having symposiums to explain what had happened on both sides, especially from family members that were part of this whole process, the community was able to come together and to sit there the day that we did the ribbon cutting for that memorial and to see people in the audience that were part of this insurrection sitting there with other people that were possibly victims of this insurrection was a beautiful and a proud day from my perspective as the mayor of this city. And I feel that those monuments have been there for quite some time, over almost 90 years now. And I think that the community is at a point that they should have a conversation and have a process very similar to 1898, because there are people on the other side that believe very passionately that those monuments should stay there. They have family members that were part of the Confederacy.
But some historians would argue then those monuments should be in that person's living room, because this is, you know, if it's about their family, what is a representative of white supremacy doing in a public space?
And I won't disagree with that comment, but I do think that they have been here for so long and they're part of the historic fabric that I do believe that whatever happens to the monuments, there should be a conversation with people so that people on both sides can face each other, so they can tell the other group how they feel about it and what it means to them. And maybe somewhere in that process, we can come to some sort of a compromise as to what maybe we should do with them or not do with them. Obviously, there's a state law in place that protects them, and it was passed in 2015 by our state legislature. Those monuments, no matter what decision the community or the city takes, will stay there until the state legislature changes that particular policy. I will tell you that I think that we need to have these types of discussions, because as we saw what happened in Charleston when this first kind of reared its head and people started talking about the removal of these monuments, that I don't think this issue will go away. I also have to take a look at the trend lines as to what generations feel about the monuments, because I've heard from younger generations and older generations as to how they feel about them. I can tell you there's passion on both sides of this debate. My job as the mayor is to try to bring people together to have a conversation and to see, is there a better place to move the monuments to, or maybe not? So that's, from my perspective, I think that's the way that the city should approach it, as opposed to if you start taking them down arbitrarily and you say they need to go, then you're going to have other groups that will take matters possibly into their own hands and say, why are we putting this monument up here there? And then there is another discussion is there room enough in the community to put other statues commemorating other things or good people that have done good things in our community that reflect the history of our community? Because even though the Confederacy and the Civil War is very much a part of the history of the city, and remember Fort Fisher was the last port of the Confederacy that failed, and after it failed, the whole thing came apart. And understanding that the state of North Carolina was the last state that succeeded from the Union, was the 12th of the Confederate states, and understanding that North Carolina lost more people than any other of the Confederate states during the war as far as the war dead, there is passion, strong passion for those monuments, and I can also see the strong passion about times have changed, let's move on. They represent something in a symbolism that we don't agree with anymore.
So Dr. Earl Sheridan, your colleague, on
who,
city council,
who I respect very much.
Yes, and he has chosen not to run again. He served for a long time on city council. But he joined us for an edition of Coastline when we talked about these monuments and the role they play. And, of course, these monuments were erected not right after the Civil War.
Correct.
But during a time when some historians argue people were trying to reestablish this notion of white supremacy. And I asked Earl Sheridan how he felt when he looked at the monuments. And he said he can't look at those monuments and feel good. Mm-hmm. Now, if you, Mayor Bill Sasso, are walking a child of color, let's say a 6 or an 8-year-old child, mm-hmm. through town and pointing out things to him, how do you explain that George Davis monument to that child and what that means to that child?
And there lies where the big rub is. What do you say to those kids, and what does that monument represent? And that is a very difficult question for me to answer. I will tell you, as a person that is of Greek descent, and we had our issues with the Turks, and an annihilation of a lot of Greek in Turkish lands where it was Constantinople. I can feel some of that sentiment if I see something erected to somebody that did something bad to my family's origins. I can understand that side of it. that's why I think we have to have a conversation, because there's so many people on both sides of this issue that need to be able to look and to talk with each other. And as I said before, Rachel, I think we did it right with the way we did 1898 Memorial, and I think that we can use the same concept and the same programming and the same planning to do this with these monuments in such a way that we don't have what happened in Charlottesville, but to do it in a way that people will come together and have some agreement as to what we do with them.
One of the people who is running for Wilmington City Council this election year has talked about the need to rebuild trust between law enforcement and communities of color, especially here in Wilmington. And there has been an effort to do some of that. As you know, there have been off-the-record conversations between members of law enforcement and members of the minority community. And they've talked about, on both sides, they've taken off their badges and just sat down eyeball to eyeball and talked about why they've been frightened of each other and where the communication gaps happen. We can't report on it because the whole point is that this is off the record and these are real conversations between people. But are you tuned into that effort, and can you tell us how it's going?
I am tuned into the effort, and I'm very supportive of the effort, and I think it's an effort that needs to be ongoing, because there is a lot of mistrust. There's a lot of misinformation on both sides. And I think that when people get to know each other and they talk to each other and they visit with each other, I think a lot of those walls come down. I think that we need to have more young people that are involved in these discussions. I don't think that we've had as many young people as part of the process that I would like to see more of. So as I've shared with our city manager, I would like to see more of these conversations continue. And I want to reach out to different groups because there is still a mistrust from the youth of the community that feel that if they sit down with the police officer, that police officer might arrest them. And I want that to break down, because we need for these folks to understand that they have a job to do. The police officers are going to uphold the law and make certain that they're going to protect the citizens when they get a call for service. And I want them to understand how that process works. And I also want to make certain that that officer that is stopping that person or apprehending that person or engaging that person does it in a way that there is respectful, that the people feel respected, and that if they feel that their civil rights in some way, shape, or form are violated, there's always another process that you can go to file something if you feel that that has happened to you. In addition to that, I'm a strong believer in transparency. I know that when I first came in City Council in 2003, the discussion then was putting cameras in the cars. That has stopped a lot of the issues about in respect to I've been stopped for harassment and stuff of that nature, because at this point in time, we can go right to the camera. We can sit down with the chief and we can see if that officer did stop properly or not. And at the same thing, I'm a very strong proponent of body cams. I think that the more transparency we have where people can see what's happening and how that officer is engaging that individual, I think the better we all are.
And where is Wilmington PD on that?
We're very close to getting it all done, but it takes a lot of money, and the amount of computer hardware and stuff that we need, the memories and all that, because we're downloading all this information on a daily basis. And obviously, if there's an incident, I know that you and the media and others would like to have that information as quickly as possible. We've got to make sure that we have that information and we can access it very quickly. And at the same time, when that officer is scanning with that body cam, there are other people that are in that shot that may be innocent, but because the body camera has scanned them and put their face online, they may be perceived to be part of an incident that they may not have been part of. So there's civil rights issues that we have to deal with and make certain that when we're going through those tapes and we're working through that process, that we can black out people's faces if need be that are innocent bystanders that just happen to be in that location when it happened. So there's some issues that we have to work through, but we're trying to roll it out as quickly as we possibly can.
It was 2015 that the Star News published an examination of the 10 highly populated cities in North Carolina and found that of those cities, only Wilmington had at-large seats for council with no districts. And in 2017, it looks like more than half of the current council lives in one precinct. Is there an argument for creating districts, and are all sectors of the city well represented?
Well, I think that all segments of the city are represented because we're all elected at large. So we represent the entire city, every one of us, whether we're elected from downtown, midtown, wherever the case may be, we have to represent the entire city because that's our job.
You have to, but is there, if you happen to be a stakeholder in, say, the historic district in downtown Wilmington.
And there's the other side of this, is that when you go by districts, then your job is to represent that district and not maybe another part of the city. That's the other part of this equation. I don't know what's right or what's wrong. I think that the process that we've had in place has been a good process. I think if a good candidate with a good message is going to get elected no matter who they are or what background they come from. Obviously, it's something that we've talked about in the past. And then how would you gerrymander a district to make sure that you reflect, you know, the composition of that particular neighborhood or that particular area? I'm not opposed to taking a look at it and to having a discussion and debate about it. I will tell you that I think that the current system that we have has represented the entire community very well. And if you look at the bonds that we have supported and in passed, or the citizens have passed, I think they reflect something that somebody gets in every part of the community. And I think it's served us pretty well. But here again, times have changed. The city is not that big of a city geographically. It's 43 square miles. So it's a very small area. So it could be done. But I think here again, we'd have to have some discussion debate.
And just looking at the population growth that we're expecting here over the next quarter century, what role does wave transit play in that conversation? And there are certainly people who say we should just fund it at the minimal level that we need to fund it because people really around here don't ride the bus. They just don't. Do you think that there's an argument to be made for that, or does the city of Wilmington need to work harder on recruiting choice riders?
I think that wave transit is probably one of the most important things that we have, and I agree with you that people are not riding it for a lot of different reasons. I think as the population grows in this area, and let me just tell you, I'll tell the citizens this, there's not so many places you can put a road in the city of Wilmington or expand a highway, and no matter where you put that or do that, you could affect somebody's lives or somebody's business. I think public transportation is something that we need to desperately work on and do a better job with an additional possibly 57,000 people in the city of Wilmington and a region that may double in size from 300-some thousand over 600,000 people. Most major metropolitan areas have good public transportation system, and I think that we will evolve into one. I don't think we're there yet, but part of that, and I can't say this, I think WAVE does a very good job at the money that they have. But remember, we set up an authority years ago that did not fund these people the way they needed to be funded, like other metropolitan areas fund their public transportation system.
Why has it been hard to get public support for this?
I just think there's a disconnect between people that are riding their cars and have the luxury of riding their cars and those that don't have the opportunity or have the luxury to be able to own a car. But I will say this, what I see, I have to take a look at the long-term trend lines. And the long-term trend lines are telling me that a lot of the young people today will rather use public transportation than their automobile. I couldn't wait when I was 16 to get a car, and a lot of these young people don't even have driver's licenses. So I think that trend line is changing dramatically. And I think at some point in time, public transportation will be much more looked upon as being a positive thing as opposed to a negative thing.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Mayor Bill Saffo, thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thank
you, Rachel.
Join us next week on the Coastline Candidate Interviews when we meet six more candidates in the race for Wilmington City Council. Thanks also to Technical Director Ken Campbell and Associate Producer Rachel Keith. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the WHQR app, and tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 and 98.9 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.